The 1994 Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium presents session number 324, a seminar, The Humanitarian Work of Enterprise Mentors, by Charles F. Cousins.
Good morning. On behalf of Sunstone Symposium, I'd like to welcome each of you here to session 324. Our topic this morning is The Humanitarian Work of Enterprise Mentors. And it will be presented by Chuck Cousins. He's the Executive Director of Enterprise Mentors. He has an MBS degree from Brigham Young University and has been the Executive Director for the last 3 years. Reading as it says in the abstract, it says, since 1990, Enterprise Mentors, a group of individuals with business experience in developing countries, has worked to help build self-reliance and an entrepreneurial spirit in the Philippines and elsewhere. Cousins will discuss how this humanitarian work has grown out of and complements church members' religious lives and what symposium participants can do to become involved in humanitarian efforts. At this time, I'd like to introduce to you Chuck Cousins.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you today. Those, just by a show of hands, how many? I know two or three were here yesterday when we took a few minutes. How many were here? Okay, to those four, I owe a little apology because you're going to see a bit of repetition. However, with the time allotted today, we have much more opportunity to go in depth, and I have about 40-some slides that I want to share with you a little later in our meeting. Let me show you where I'd like to take you for the next few minutes that we have together. Highlight why we're in existence, what we do to meet what we perceive to be the need, how we go about our task, and then who we are, and then summarize with some of the photographs and that material, and then open it up to any questions and answers. So you've been forewarned as to where we're going. As I indicated yesterday in some of my comments, as our board members, all of whom have had overseas experience, in many cases they've lived overseas, in many cases they are business and professional people, in all cases, are very aware of the challenges that we face in the developing countries or the less developed nations of the world. And just a few of the statistics. Over three-fourths of the world's 5.3 billion people live in developing countries. Of the 80 million people currently being added to the world's population, I'm sorry, of the 93 million currently being added to the world's population each year, 87 million, or 94%, are born in developing countries. So this presents some interesting challenges, and we think also some interesting opportunities. Over two-thirds of the world's population live in what the professionals describe as poverty and human suffering conditions. The abundance that most of us know as Americans and people that live in this great country comes to great contrast as we travel in these nations. Now, for 40 years, we've been trying to do things internationally. We, the United States, through government programs and through various foreign aid programs. And I shared yesterday this comment from a writer who's been studying this issue. Despite 40 years of effort by the industrial nations of the West to improve the lot of the world's poor through massive capital transfers, global missions, expert interventions, and a multitude of aid programs, it's become increasingly evident in recent years that not much has changed. And I shared yesterday the comment of a friend who was commenting on foreign aid and said there are only two problems with foreign aid. Number one, it's foreign. Number two, it's aid. And the implication of that is that often the best aid or the best assistance is that is done locally, that is done under situations and conditions that is indigenous to the people being helped, and that when we term aid, often a hand up is better than a hand out. And that certainly undergirds the philosophy of our board and of our foundation. So these are some of the circumstances that we see in the world. Now, what about the church? I noticed in the Tribune this morning there were some presentations given yesterday, the last 2 days apparently, on the rapid growth of the church globally. We, most of us, are very aware of that. Let me share with you a couple of pieces of information related to that from our perspective. The growth, this is a quote from the president of our foundation that he gave recently. He served as a mission president in the Philippines two different times, as a matter of fact, and is currently a regional representative and a retired, very successful businessman out in the St. Louis area. In a group that he was speaking to, he stated, "The growth of the church in developing countries is in many cases explosive. For example, the Philippines has been supplying about 10% of all worldwide converts for the last several years. The growth of the individual members in these countries, however, is in many cases significantly hampered by the destitution evident in their temporal conditions. The causes are both spiritual and temporal, and usually accompanied by unemployment or underemployment, and compounded by the marginal productivity of many areas of the local economies. The result is an inability of the members to provide for their own temporal needs, to finance their own church programs, and to have the time, energy, and leadership capabilities necessary to move the church forward and to improve the quality of life for themselves and their communities. The temporal condition of the saints in the Philippines and other developing countries is often heartrending as well as debilitating." Related to this issue, in most developing countries, the church is years away from financial self-sufficiency. I clarified what, or tried to expand on what we mean there. Secondly, financial constraints limit the ability of the church to support continuing growth in developing countries, or at least growth as fast as perhaps it could if we had more adequate financing. The church can be locally sufficient only if members are self-sufficient. Means must be developed to accelerate self-sufficiency for members, including return missionaries in developing countries. And I commented yesterday, one of our directors just returned. He's a former mission president to Brazil of some 10 years or so ago, recently went down there on a kind of an update fact-finding trip for our foundation. And he, in visiting with the area presidency, found that there will be 2,000 native Brazilian return missionaries coming home annually starting in about a year. The numbers in the Philippines are not quite that high, but there are hundreds, literally, in many of these developing countries of native, indigenous return missionaries coming home. And in the poorer countries, opportunities to enhance their livelihood and their income and their future are very dreary at best in many cases. So these are some of the things that our directors and the founders of our organization were concerned about. They felt, and we feel, that regular employment in the formal sector in many of these countries really isn't available to many, many of our church members. Generally, they have access only to an irregular livelihood through the informal sector. And this means that they must often be self-employed. As such, they're often subject to graft and bureaucratic red tape and corruption, and have limited access to needed resources, including business capital, as you raised the question, I think, yesterday. Typically, many lack entrepreneurial skills. They have some native abilities and high motivation and keen interest in improving their lives, but lack some of the technical know-how to prepare and start and run an ongoing successful enterprise. We believe the church does provide a very vital, needed ingredient for success, however, and that's the spiritual values that we think are required for long-term success and necessary in business endeavors. The church's mission, however, does not include its involvement in the life of its members in the conduct or support of private business activities. And we have some history in the Kirtland era of our church history that validate that point, we believe. In other words, while the church is vital, extremely vital, it's not enough. And this is why Enterprise Mentors was founded. Enterprise Mentors builds upon the moral elements of character development provided by the church, and I should hasten to add, and other churches. the moral and character development, and provides the needed entrepreneurial management skills through training, consulting, and encouragement, as well as providing access to needed resources. In our programs, we do not limit the programs to LDS members. We open the programs. We are non-sectarian. Over half of our staff and over half of the people that we've helped, and I'll give you some numbers here shortly, have been non-members. So we do try to maintain and feel very strongly about the fact that as a humanitarian organization, even though we have heavy sponsorship by LDS members as individuals, we provide our services to all people who are interested. So we kind of summarize this area by saying Enterprise Mentors cannot do what the church does. That's not our mission. Nor is it within the mission of the church to do what Enterprise Mentors does. But working cooperatively together, we can provide all of the essential ingredients to enable self-sufficiency for many of the dedicated members in emerging nations. And I say many. We can't go in and help all the poor. All the poor are not going to be successful cottage industry business people. Many of them don't want that. Many of them might want it but don't have the native ability. So it isn't an answer to all of the questions of poverty, but we are taking a significant section of the people who are living below poverty levels and being able to help them, as you'll see shortly. So I move now to the second statement on what we do to meet the need. I've tried now to address that first part of our question pertaining to the environment and what is out there and what motivated us to form this foundation. Our mission statement reads, "We're in business to build self-reliance and entrepreneurial spirit within those who struggle for sufficiency in developing countries." That's the first sentence that basically is what we're about. The rest kind of starts telling how we do it. This is done with those who are committed to building their livelihood, their families, and communities through micro and small-scale enterprises. Through training, character development, counseling, and mentoring, sound business practices are established. Results created include improved livelihood, employment opportunities, hope for a better life, greater self-respect, self-sufficiency, and self-realization. This phrase, I know most everybody in this audience is very familiar with, give a man a fish and you feed him for a day, teach him how to fish and you feed him for a lifetime. I'm a native of Wyoming up near Yellowstone Park, and some of the people up there suggest this should read, give a man a fish and you feed him for a day, teach him how to fish and you lose him for a lifetime. But some of the wives, spouses of fisher people up in that country think that statement should apply like that. But we're all familiar with this. This truly is the underlying theme of what we are attempting to do in our organization in truly teaching them skills and talents and abilities that are portable, that no one can take from them. We conducted hundreds and hundreds of training seminars over the last several years. We started in 1990. And some of those people have moved from the cities where we have our three training centers, but they haven't left those skills behind. They take them with them, and we are teaching lifetime skills, which we feel good about. Our board of directors, we're divided into the following areas. We have area councils. We have a board chair and a vice chair who head up these geographic areas of focus. We started in the Philippines of our 24 board of directors, and they're, I'll show you some information about them here in just a moment. Several of them, seven of the 24 are former mission presidents, and four of the seven former mission presidents had served in the Philippines. So because of that keen personal interest and experience, our test site started in the Philippines. We opened our first training center in Manila, and then a year and a half later, opened in the second largest city of Cebu, our second training center, and then about a year and a half ago in Davao, the third largest city in the Philippines, we opened our third center. We've been on two trips to Brazil and are about ready to begin some serious expansion in Brazil, and we have had requests from Mexico, Central America, and Africa, and we have these five committees now divided up for focus for future expansion. The question is, why don't we have one for the Near East? And it could also be asked, why don't we have one for Eastern Europe and a dozen other places? And the need out there in any developing country we have found is pretty similar to what we discovered in the countries that we've named up here. We, due to resources and limited resources, we don't have the wherewithal to go globally quickly, as quickly as we would like. And our board feels very strongly that we would rather go a little slower and effectively and systematically get established and prove the model that we're using and then move gradually rather than trying to be in 10 places at once and do it mediocre. We'd rather be in two places or four places and do an excellent job. The job we've done, by the way, I want to share with you. One of the things that we measure our progress by is how many jobs we create. And in many of these countries, in fact, most if not all, they're with larger families, when we can help bring a job or a payroll into a family, it literally lifts the lives of five or six other individuals. So if we help 1,000 people with increased income, we've literally helped 5,000 or 6,000 due to the impact of in many of these countries. Since our beginning, 1990, when we entered Manila, we strictly spent most of that year getting legally set up. We actually form a foundation with a local indigenous board of directors. We hire only indigenous staff. We feel that's very important because we're trying to teach them the principle of self-reliance too. Our foundation literally funds these new startup foundations for a 5 or 6 year period with the idea that by the end of 5 or 6 years, they'll be able to be on their own and finance their own operation. So we pay 100% the first year and 100% the second year and then 80% and then 70% and 50% and 30% as we teach them and help them learn how to raise funds locally within their own country. But we think it's important that we have indigenous boards, indigenous staff. I'm the only gringo, if you will, that goes over and interacts with our people as far as from a training and development point of view. And so the first year we got legally established and staffed and started developing curriculum. And in 1991, we began our serious creating jobs and training seminars and so forth. To date, we've been able to identify over 1,200 jobs that we have created, which would be roughly 6,000 lives that have been uplifted as a result of those new jobs created. We've had 400-some seminars in which 7,000, a little over 7,000 people have attended those seminars, and that's the portable training that I mentioned earlier that they can take with them wherever they go. We have over 1,400 consulting clients. Now, these are little micro businesses. Many of them are home-based. Some have as many as 65 employees. Most have as few as 2 or 3 or 5 employees. And we are, after we train them through our seminars, then we invite them if they wish, if they want one of our trained staff to come and visit their little businesses weekly or twice a month or monthly, for a period of 3 months or 6 months, 6 months or 9 months or 12 months, whatever. We actually work out a little written contract, and we charge them a few pesos per visit for this purpose. It is not nearly enough to cover our expenses. And in all of our seminars, we give nothing away free. We are trying to teach the principle that value given for value received. And we found early on that if we even charge 5 cents or a few pesos for the training materials that we distribute, it's respected, it's treated well, it's given much greater value to them. Yes. No, jobs. And let me give you an example. One of the in the slides, I'll show you some of these. As near as we've been able to calculate, we've helped create about 400 businesses. But most of those hire two or three people as they're starting up. One, our greatest success experience, hired 65, and I've got some slides of that. But so the number of new businesses established versus jobs is always less. But it's about 400 to 1,200 right now. Correct. That would be correct. And some of the businesses, some of the people that we've helped already had existing businesses up and running, but they didn't know how to put together a loan request, or they didn't know how to do a correct market survey, and we've helped them now expand and open a second and a third outlet and increase their employment from 3 people to 9 people, from 9 to 15 and so forth. So some of the growth comes that way. Is there another question? The question is, what would we say to the question relating to maybe we're Americanizing them too much and really not helping them stay in the informal economies? That's part of the reason we're sensitive to that, and part of the reason we felt from day one it was important to have indigenous boards of directors and staff, because they do things differently than we do, and we recognize that. We also recognize, as we go to Latin America, that they're going to do things differently than they do in the Philippines. As far as making them dependent on a cash economy, I guess the real world that they live in, and we're in Manila, 8.5 million people. We didn't go out to the countryside because that's where a lot of the people are coming in to that need assistance. One case, I'm going to show you a slide here, of Felix Navarro. Felix is a trained engineer, bachelor's degree in engineering, cannot get a job in engineering. Came from the country wherein his mother had developed a wonderful, it's kind of like a tapioca pudding, but it's a little dessert deal. And he and his family, they have 4 children, and they're paying tuition for these kids to go to school. They get coconut shells and create this dessert at home in a big pot that they cook. And Felix sells it to street vendors and stores. Well, they live in Manila. They have to subsist on a cash economy to buy food, to pay rent for their house, to pay their electricity. If they're fortunate enough to have electricity, and they happen to. So to survive, at least in the cities, it's necessary to help them develop techniques and ways of using their native abilities to generate cash to survive. Now, if they were out in the country, that probably wouldn't be as necessary. I don't know if that's reaching to your question or not. But that's the reality that we see there. No, we aren't. No, that's true. And you're going to see in some of the slides, when you get out on the fringes of Manila, we start getting into some of the rural areas, but they still, it still isn't a barter economy for some of the things they need. The power company won't take little piglets or sugar cane for the power bill. They need pesos there. So, let me finish with some of these results. I mentioned the training seminars, the consulting clients. We've helped over 300 little businesses access loans. Now, we really aren't in the lending business. We are primarily training and consulting. The humanitarian department from the church has now, we've got a pilot test going in Manila with some micro loans, and these are small loans, $50 to $100. To us, it almost sounds absurd. To many of those people, $50 or $100 is significant. It can help them get out of the grasps of using the money lenders. The money lenders have what they call a 5-6 rule. They'll loan you $5 or 5 pesos, and at the end of the week, you're expected to pay them back 6. Well, it doesn't sound too bad until you start annualizing the interest rate on that, and it's fantastic, 2,000+% annual interest rate. 5-6 lenders. So we're able to get some of them with a $50 or $100 loan, enough capital to buy some inventory and get them out of the grasps of paying of the usurious money lending rates that fund those people that can't qualify for traditional loans. I think it would be helpful now for us to review some of the slides. Menlo Smith, who's the president, the former mission president in the Philippines. The question has been asked, many of these people, in fact, as I look down the list, well, there are several that are entrepreneurs of themselves, but nevertheless, many of them are in larger companies. How would they have the expertise to be able to help micro enterprise people? And I guess my experience in business and for the last 25 years and having been in small businesses in northern Wyoming and also having worked in New York City and other major areas around the country is that the same principles work whether you've got one employee or a little home-based business. It has to be based upon some principles that should operate also for a General Mills. And it's just as important to have integrity and honesty on the basic level as it is on the corporate level. If you were to see our curriculum, you would see that it's pretty basic. I mean, we're not teaching high-tech accounting systems. We're teaching single-entry bookkeeping, but that's more than they knew before we went in and showed them how to keep a simple set of books. But as you can see, Steve Mann up in Idaho, he's an international trainer and developer, and he's also now an entrepreneur, private investor. Dr. Woodworth, Warner Woodworth, many of you know, he's spoken at previous symposiums here. He and a team of his students in 1989 went to the Philippines and did the initial survey work for our study. Bud Billiter has been president of his own company out in San Francisco, is now here in Salt Lake with Zions. Catherine Boswell is on, many of you know Catherine. She's assistant to the president of Salt Lake Community College. She's had extensive international development experience in Africa and various places. Harvey Brown, retired USAID executive, currently he's in Haiti for the government. Joe Cannon, you know here. Dr. Dyer, former dean of the business school. Will Carden, former mission president to Brazil, his own business in Arizona. Mary Ellen Edmonds, some marvelous experience in developing nations in Asia and Africa. We feel fortunate to have her. Ray Goodson served as a mission president in Brazil, or in the Philippines, has his own business here. Dick Headley does a lot of development work over in Romania. He comes from the Michigan area. Fred Huckvale is currently serving a mission in England and has been an entrepreneur, his own company. Dr. Bill Jackson was on the panel with me yesterday, who heads up Deseret International. Joe Kerr, former executive VP here with Bonneville and former mission president of the Philippines. Ruben Lacanienta. Ruben lives here in Salt Lake now. He's a native Filipino. Ron Maloof, a businessman from down in Texas. Frank Martino, another Texas businessman. Walter Muir is from San Jose area. Gary Neeleman, many of you may know him here. Extensive international experience. David Richards, former mission president to Mexico. Mark Willis of General Mills. Jack Zenger, vice president and founder of Zenger Miller, which later sold to Times Mirror. Wonderful asset on our board. Okay, I think, did that answer your question? Okay, let's switch now to you're exactly right. And you probably know more of them and their earlier background than I do. But I know in some cases they started from some pretty humble beginnings. On the slides, could I recruit you to be the... Now, if you can't see, some of you over here, you might want to reposition yourself. This first slide, I just wanted to show those maybe that haven't had some experiences in third world countries. This is Manila, suburban Manila, and those two mountains you see in the background are garbage dumps. Next slide. These are the little, not far from the dump sites, and when I say not far, 50 yards, we find families living, squatters that have staked out a few feet of ground and built their homes from whatever they could find. Next slide. By the way, that's Smoky Mountain that has a lot of history. These are the people who are rummaging through Smoky Mountain's dumps. I mean, this 8.5 million people in Manila, this is where their garbage came for many years. Now, when I was over there about a year ago, they were closing Smoky Mountain down and moving to some other types of disposal systems that would be more in keeping with better health and so forth. But for years, there were literally hundreds of people that made their livelihoods by going through the garbage and sorting out anything that had any salvage value. Next slide. You can't see this very well, but many of these are young children. And they literally teem when a new garbage truck, or sometimes it comes in by boat, is dumped. They just swarm over those areas getting anything with value. Next slide. Now, all of the areas of the Philippines are not like that, and I don't want to represent that. A more typical poorer neighborhood of homes would look like this. There'll be dirt streets, be two stories, but this is not untypical in the suburban areas of Manila and some of the rural areas. Next slide, please. I just want to give you a flavor before we talk about some of the specifics. Now, contrasting what you just saw with this slide, this is in downtown Manila, a beautiful restoration of several hundred-year-old Spanish area in downtown. Next slide, please. Got that in backwards. They really don't write backwards. On English is the second language in the Philippines. The common mode of getting around is by what they call tricycles, these little motorbike deals, and in some cases they're literally a bicycle that is pedaled by a human being. And then these other devices that are called jeepneys, and they're a carryover from World War II days where some of the entrepreneurial Filipinos lengthened the chassis, and you can put about 20 people in and pay a few pesos, and that's their bus system for much of the metropolitan areas. Next slide, please. This is just another shot of a very typical street scene, not in the downtown of Metro Manila, because it would look like the downtown of New York or Chicago in many cases, but out a little. Next slide. And this is a picture of these jeepneys that I said. And these are businesses. These jeepney drivers, they drive, and they can sit 16 or 18 people in the back or 20, and they make change as they're driving with one hand and making change over the other. They're really entrepreneurial types of people, and they make some very good livelihoods by running these routes. Next slide. I'm sorry, that's in backwards also. That is in English. It says the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. What I wanted to point out to you is some of the nicest, most attractive public buildings in the islands happen to be Mormon facilities. Next slide. This happened to be a couple of a little Filipino missionary, which they call them, they're called Filipinas, the women, and an American sister who was serving over there and having marvelous time and great success. Next picture. This is probably the most attractive building in Metro Manila, and not just because I'm LDS would I say that. Even the taxicab drivers will tell you that. And it's on a beautiful hill. It's clean and neat in the grounds. Those are the cleanest grounds you'll see in all of Manila. And that's the temple that's been there for the last few years. Next slide. Now I'm going to tell you a little about some of our clients. This is Wilma De Los Santos. She looks like she's about 17. Next slide. But she's a little older than that. She's actually got four children and a husband. Her husband drives one of these jeepney deals that we talked about. When Wilma first met us, she had a little home sewing knitting machine in her living room. And we're standing on the front porch of her little house. Her whole house is probably the size of from here to the corner. That's probably a little too big. And basically a couple of rooms. And she was making about 50 pesos a day, which would be about $2 a day, by making three garments, three lovely sweaters a day on her knitting machine. Watching your children. Next slide, please. Okay, I'm back. Let me finish Vilma's story. We met her. She learned about our training. We set her up a bookkeeping system, showed her how to run that, taught her about some marketing. Within a year, she had four other women working for her, and she was paying them three times per day what she had been earning for her previous employer. And she hired her sister to call on department stores to market her product. And she has been able to add significant new income to that little family's subsistence level of income. And she's been a very bright star in one of our home-based micro-businesses. This is Reggie DiAro. Like I said, they really don't write backwards. That's my fault. Reggie is here with his daughter, and he worked over in the Mideast as a machinist for two or three years, saved his money, came back to the Philippines, and opened in a little one-stall garage a machine shop. He found out about our training, attended our seminars. Next slide. And this is Reggie and his wife, Linda. She went to the training with him. She learned how to do the bookkeeping. She learned how to do the marketing. And within a year, year and a half, they moved out of the little one-stall garage. They expanded their, bought some land behind their home, built this expansion of their machine shop. Now, it's an open air. They just have the cover on in many cases over there. Was able now to start buying some equipment. Next slide, please. Linda, they build these, manufacture these little Jeeps is one thing a lot of the auto repair types of folks do. And Reggie does this. And this is Linda doing some marketing for him. Next slide. He now has, I was over there in October, and at that time he had 14 employees working instead of zero. 14 different families now getting an improved lifestyle as a result of that. Next slide. And this young man, when I first met him, he had his mouth full of bubble gum. He was 19 years old, sitting there working on a transmission cover, it looks like, and earning money to go on his mission. And he's now in the mission field. But I brought that home primarily to show my teenage kids that they're not too avant-garde wearing their Levi's with holes in them. Question? Very likely. Or may have had a job that paid half of what they're earning for Reggie DiAro. Yeah. Next slide. This young fellow is Chris Caraldi from Cebu. Chris met one of our members in a training course where he was learning about how to make handmade paper. He met him in Manila, and Chris was from Cebu and talked to our contact up there. Chris in high school had gotten several honors. He was an outstanding chemistry and science student. Our center, training center in Cebu, showed him how to set up his business. And when I visited Chris this time, he had four other teenage fellows working for him and six or seven women in the neighborhood working for him, making handmade paper. Next slide. This fellow over here, Chinese-Filipino, is Ed Shoddy. He's our executive director in Cebu, former stake president, convert to the church, as most all of our members over there are. Wonderful fellow and a great entrepreneur. We find in the Philippines that most of the business people that are long-term successful people have Chinese contacts and are Chinese affiliated. But he is. They came upon an idea of taking this handmade paper, which is used for calendar work and cards and beautiful stuff, and making slippers that are left in hotels. And they're working, discussing that. And our young friend Chris had made these samples. Next slide. I went over a year later. Chris now is married. We caught him with his eyes closed in the middle. He has joined forces with a Chinese businessman on the right. The two of, and this is one of our little consultants. This is Chit Lacito on the left. MBA, has had about 5 years work experience, a wonderful consultant, delightful young lady. Chris and the Chinese fellow now with 50 employees making handmade paper. And that started from 2 years ago, meeting one of our, in fact, he met Ed Shoddy up at this seminar that I mentioned. Next slide. This couple, that's kind of a dark slide. I apologize for that. The Antisero family, Sister Antisero, she is a member of the church, obviously. He's a former bishop. She was in the business of creating hand-designed tablecloths and toaster covers and kitchen. They even use them for cover the top of the refrigerators and so forth. And they were really nicely done, but she wasn't sure whether she was making money or not. She was keeping busy, but she wasn't sure she made profit. So she attended some of our courses. We assigned a consultant to her, and you can see here she's got two young ladies hired making these table coverings and so forth, and we helped her set up a marketing program. She was able to hire two more young ladies, and so it provided a couple of additional jobs paid at a fair wage that weren't available before, and she now markets in several cities around the Philippines. Next slide. No, she's from Manila. Yeah. This fellow on the right is Reggie, is his first name, I've forgotten. Fellow on the left is Lort Libid. He's one of our consultants in Manila. Lort's a former counselor in the stake presidency. He has had a lot of financial experience with financial institution. And he helped this guy set up a car repair center. And in this car repair center, they fabricate these Jeep-type devices and repair cars and so forth. And they picked the logo and the design and helped him lay it out and helped him advertise it. And from a one-man operation, he hired two or three other employees, and so it created three or four jobs. Next slide. This fellow, Brother De La Cuesto from Cebu on the left, with Ed Shoddy, our executive director, he set up a little construction company, and he has anywhere from 10 to 30 employees in any given month doing all kinds of different building construction types of jobs. And he didn't know a bookkeeping system from a driver's manual when we first met him. He's an intelligent, bright guy, but he just didn't have the benefit of having training in small business skills. And he's been a neat success story for us there. Next slide, please. This is Lorena Isles, I-S-L-E-S. She's a Relief Society president in suburban Manila, and she has a nice little store, we call them sari-sari stores in the Philippines, and they're like a little 7-Eleven except about half the size. But she was concerned about some of the ladies in her ward not having sufficient income and so forth, and so we helped line her up with where she could learn how to make handbags and home-sewn articles, and she taught these other gals, and she helps market them through her store and other retail outlets in the area and has helped create some additional income for several of the sisters there. Next slide. This is her husband. His name really is Filipino. His name is Filipino Isles, and he's a bright-eyed, ambitious little guy that has his own hardware store. She has the Sari Sari store, and half a mile away, he's got his own hardware store. We helped him find a new site and get a better bookkeeping system and do some more marketing and get a loan, and has helped increase his business substantially. Next slide. This is a young couple from Cebu that are marketing. This is rice, or not rice, but noodles hanging around, and they market that at this wholesale market. Next slide. I'm going to have to whip through these quicker. I see our time's about gone. This is Virginia's Enterprise. This is Virginia. Initially, she had a couple of helpers, and what they do is scavenger cardboard and cut it up and clean it up, cut all the ragged edges off, and package it and sell it to other container companies, resell it. And she's got several big paper cutters and kind of a big building about like this room where she keeps the stuff dry. She found this way of making money, and we helped her systematize it and find some other sources of some customer sources. She now has 9 people working for her, and they're scavenging cardboard. Next slide, please. This young lady, they make cloth diapers that they export to the Dutch in the Netherlands. And We help them set up their production lines. They have about 15 employees now from two or three when we first met them, and are trying to expand their exports to other markets. They make a very nice, high-quality diaper. Next slide. Again, a backward slide for which I apologize. This young fellow has an auto supply business that he retired early from a company and came to us saying he wanted to start a small business but didn't know what and how and where, and we helped him come to grips with all of those questions. Next slide. This is an interior shot of his little shop. It's not very big, but he creates a livelihood for his family. Next slide. This young lady, she started a business in scavenging scrap paper from offices. And when we first met her, she had a couple of people, and they had a little overhead to keep the thing from the area from getting wet. And they would bale this scrap paper. Next slide. And she expanded. Through the research, we found if they would separate the colored paper from the white paper, they could get much greater value out of the white paper. And taught them how to do that, showed them some systems, and they now do a ton of this a day from waste that they gather from offices and supply nine families work to do this, nine jobs. Next slide. To recyclers, paper manufacturers. This is a little shoemaker. This guy is standing in the back, is the owner. He knew nothing about making shoes, but he retired early from a company. He actually got laid off early with a little retirement fund. And we helped him get it going in a shoemaking operation. Next slide. And this sister in the back, in the middle, she was a school principal and really wasn't getting a lot of satisfaction out of her work, decided to start her own preschool. And she has this in her home, and she's a talented lady with a very ambitious schedule of active kids, and she hired two other people to help her, and so we helped her get launched, and that created three jobs there. Next slide. This young lady is one of Vilma's. I visited her at her home. We did, and she creates some of the blouses and so forth for Sister De Los Santos that I showed you earlier. Next slide, please. Now, here's our rural project. This is a piggery. This fellow retired early. This is in Metro Manila. Didn't know what to do with his money. Knew he didn't have enough to make a livelihood. He had rural roots. And we did some research for him. And he now has a bunch of piglets and a few sows. And he's creating a livelihood, at least for his family. Next slide. This little family have a sari store. This is the owner on the left and his two kids. And after we met them, we showed them how they could expand their business so that the older son could operate his own store a few miles away, and they're in the process of doing that now. Next slide. And this young fellow is a bishop in Metro Manila. He does silk screening. He's got some great contracts with Nike and some other companies whose names I can't read backward. Next slide. He has three employees. This is Felix Navarro that makes this route that I talked about earlier. Elder Hanks and I visited them in October, and you can see his little family. If you were able to look around, you would recognize he's not living in the greatest of circumstances, but he's making a good living and certainly making a better living than he was a year and a half ago without our help. Next slide. Young fellow, it's all relative, I guess, a former state president, had a brain tumor, went through surgery, lost his job, but with some of the settlement from that, wanted to go in business. We helped him go through a baking school. He's bought his bakery equipment. He's now setting up a neighborhood bakery where they deliver fresh bread to the people in the neighborhood. Yes, next slide. I'm sorry, that's not incorrect. This young fellow that started this business didn't know what to name it. Well, you can see what he chose if you're good at reading backwards. It was Mormon Electronics. When we first visited him, we were kind of shocked that he would pick that name, but he said nobody had cleared it with the authorities for proper usage, and so he thought it was good to use it. But we're trying to discourage him from using that and trying to encourage him to maybe pick another name. In case he has some bad results with some of his repairs, we didn't really want it to reflect on that organization. Anyway, this young fellow, bright young guy, electronic repairs, hired three people to work for him. He's expanding. Next slide. Are we out of time? This is a little shoemaker. This is our consultant on the left. The shoemaker's Paul, I've forgotten his last name, and they call their shoe company St. Paul's. This is his partner, the two of them. They make some beautiful shoes. You can see she's holding the little gold lady's slipper. And again, a little organization we helped get up and running. Next slide. This guy down in Cebu runs, of all things, a roller rink. He found a flat area from the city that was concrete, went to them and encouraged them to give him license to rent that. When we met him, he had hundreds of pairs of skates, no system in maintaining them, no system in really marketing his services, and we took him on as a client, and he's now expanded to three other locations and created several other jobs. Next slide. This little lady on the left, whose name I forget at the moment, she's 24 years old, graduated as a pharmacist, wanted to set up her own business and didn't know how. And she was introduced to us. We helped her find a location, worked with her on how to set it up, how to stock it, and she's created a little job here for two other employees plus herself. Delightful young lady. Ambitious, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, really a fun operation. She called it Asia Medco is the name on the front of her pharmacy. Next slide, please. And I wanted to show you, as we get out in the suburbs, this is how we consult. This is our executive director, Ed Shoddy. This is Chit Lacero in the middle, one of our consultants. Fellow on the right, he's wanting to start a bakery. He happens to be a bishop. And they're going to look at some sites in the neighborhood for him to start a bakery. Next slide. Yes. Okay. Just whip through these really quickly. Picture frame business. These are two of our folks in Manila with the executive director of a large company that we're doing some training for. Next slide. This is the success story of this large firm in Manila. They downsized and laid off 700 people in one plant. And we went in and said, look, we can help train these people on some other livelihood projects. One area, there were 65 employees laid off. We got together with them, showed them how to form a co-op. They now do their similar jobs, sell the product back to their employer. They earn their money, plus they have ownership in the company. It's been a wonderful experience. Next slide. Another shot. It's actually glass bottle recycling. Next slide. And just to show you that we're not a bunch of Americans over there trying to teach them what to do, this is our board and staff in Cebu, and the only American face you can see there is me in the middle, if you can see this. The rest are all our Filipino folks. Next slide. And many of our clients, this is one of our training classes, and this is the last slide. I wanted to show you this. Look at the ratio between men and women. That's not unusual, not only in the Philippines, but in many of our third world countries, for the women to be the good business entrepreneurs, and they're concerned about the education for their children and clothing and better food, and they make very highly motivated business people. Kill it. That's it. Let me put on one conclusion, and I'm sorry. I'm going to read it to you in light of time. Except I have to find my glasses. Okay, all of this may be fine and good, and you may say, what now? What can I do? The need is out there. The need is tremendous. The need is larger than any one of us can afford to support. But with a lot of people helping, we can reach a lot of lives. And I just want to share with you a really interesting comment I read from Aristotle. It says, to give away money is an easy matter and in any man's power, but to decide to whom to give it and how large and when and for what purpose and how is neither in every man's power nor an easy matter. Churchill said, we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. And Joseph Smith said, a man filled with the love of God is not content with blessing his family alone, but ranges through the whole world anxious to bless the whole human race. I appreciate the opportunity of spending this hour with you. I'll have at the back door here a sign-up sheet if any of you want to get on our newsletter.